presents the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a notice seen in a church service sheet read by Peter Donaldson.
The final session of the Lent course on Sloth has been postponed.
Thanks, David Neal, for sending us that. Let's now meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton, and a newcomer to the News Quiz, John Nicholson. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Linda Smith. Andy, can you remember who Frank Dobson was?
This is a very difficult question to answer, isn't it, in the light of the fact that history may... I may get this completely wrong by the time the repeat goes out. I've been a bit bored by this election, frankly, because I deplore the informality of it. Because all the posters, it's all on first-name terms, isn't it? It's vote Ken and vote Frank. And the Lib Dems blew it, because who's going to vote Susan? But I understand that if Ken Livingstone, by some extraordinary fluke, should actually be the mayor, then they're going to shackle him.
Is that at his request?
Or? I don't know. I would have thought that's a rather unsubtle way for the Blair machine to control Ken Livingstone. You could do that with bears, but not politicians.
When I went to poll, there was a very keen lady from the Labour Party standing there with a little rosette and said, "Could I ask you how you're going to vote?" And I said, "Yes, I'm going to vote for Frank Dobson." Her little face lit up and I went, "Joking!"
Bless.
I feel sorry for Frank. His body language, I was trying to think what his body language reminded me of. His walk is the walk of an England batsman going out to the crease. That kind of, "Well, I'll do my best, but let's get it over with as soon as possible. Let's hope I'm just not out first ball, you know."
Labour suffered humiliation at the polls on Thursday.
Is this programme live, by any chance?
At the polls on Thursday, Steve Norris enjoyed a late surge, which is what he tells all the ladies. 2 points to Andy. John, welcome to the News Quiz.
Thank you very much.
Who'll fight them on the streets? Who'll fight them in McDonald's?
Well, I suspect these are these dreadful hooligans who were marching through London. They're environmentalists, and as the Daily Mail pointed out, celebrated their environmentalism by digging up all the grass opposite Westminster and planting turnips. It's not the vegetable I'd have chosen, but nonetheless, I believe they were dug up in a rage by Tony Blair soon afterwards. One of the writers, it turns out, to be a boy from Eton. Some say that he's been chucked out of Eton, but his father was very insulted by the notion. He says that his son has written a letter of resignation from Eton.
There's been a lot of blame being thrown around. It seems to me I blame Margaret Thatcher. Because when she abolished socialism because the voices told her to, back in the 70s, she gave no forethought or planning at all to what she'd replace it with. So instead of socialism, we got this anti-capitalism, which isn't a movement, it's just a feeling, I think. And it resulted in this dreadful sort of ragbag of disparate groups turning up, anarchists campaigning against rapacious greed by smashing windows and stealing the till.
Rum old do as sort of riots go, wasn't it? It was like some terrible juggling festival that had got awfully out of hand. There's people in those big, brightly coloured shoes that toddlers wear.
And at the risk of sounding more and more like my dad, what time do you call this, I see it started already.
Is that, is that Neil Hamilton?
I'm not ashamed of him. No, but who on earth takes their children on a demo like that? Did you see that? There were sort of these rather sort of superannuated hippies with little 6-year-olds dancing around a maypole, having a really lovely time as police horses charged up the mall behind them. You know, there is Alton Towers available.
The mob went on to attack a branch of McDonald's. Once inside, they did unspeakable things, daubing the walls with graffiti, smashing the seats, and actually eating Big Macs. We don't want clowns like this in our restaurant, said the spokesman for the fast food company, Mr. Ronald McDonald, filled in. 2 points to John. Linda, who hopes their stock will rise after their European Union?
Oh, I'm glad you've asked me this, because I do know an awful lot in detail about this question. Of course, I won't bore you with it, and also, frankly, I don't think you could follow it, to be honest. It's very high-level stuff. Apparently, London and Frankfurt are merging. I think we'll lose an awful lot of greenbelt. They're not really adjacent, are they? But this may be a good or bad thing, depending on whether you care. And it's all to do with the euro as well. And all I know about that is it's now currently not really worth the potato it's printed with. And that, I think, from our economics correspondent over here, is what's going on. Is that the answer, Simon?
Yes, it is.
Good.
Has anybody seen a euro?
Yes.
What does it look like?
It looks like a William Brothers token. The Co-op Society used to hand out these tin tokens. It looks like that. They haven't been in France. They're not worth anything.
They're like World Cup medals.
What, the ones you got from garages?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they're not worth money. I mean, all your economic stuff was pretty spot on, but you...
haven't I?
The cry that will go up in the city, Andy. They think it's all over. It is now.
You can explain this to your colleagues on the news tomorrow. You can say that this economic stuff, I went on the news quiz and it's all clear to me now.
Yes.
And that.
Yes. I don't really talk to my colleagues on the news, though. We just exchange merry banter.
Oh, right.
For the cameras, and then we ignore one another during the films.
Do you really hate each other, that nice-looking woman who sits next to you?
No, we enjoy a very warm relationship, but we're meant to flirt with one another a little bit. We're told that's part of the job description. Our newscasters are meant to have sexual chemistry.
Oh. Which is, does it ever get too far?
We don't bother with that, do we, Alan?
Well, Peter Donaldson and I have this quiet thing going. Yes.
Alan, listen to this.
Someday you'll know I was the one, but tomorrow may rain, so I'll follow the sun.
Alan, why does the sun no longer shine out of Tony Blair's backside?
It has switched allegiances.
It has.
I don't think there's anything else in that, is there?
No, not really.
Elizabeth Murdoch is leaving Sky, quite interestingly, and that ghastly sun he's got is taking over. But I don't think there's any more in that.
Extraordinary thing about it was, I don't know if you noticed, that Tony Blair wrote... It was a handwritten letter that he sent to the sun. Did you see the handwriting?
Mm.
I thought it was a bit deranged.
And they had a graphologist on it immediately who said exactly that.
Because he kept
man is unstable.
He kept scoring things out and then putting arrows up and adding little extra bits. And the Sun's headline that morning was, Tony writes, I think it was 195 words.
No, 975.
All
sorry,
different words.
975 words. Can you imagine? Some Sun journalist has sat down and counted 975 words just to find out...
Not understanding any of them.
Well... presumably, or trying to work out what the other 970 words are that he didn't know.
I think it's likely that a Sun journalist would have had to got someone in to do that, really. Economists like myself.
Yes, the counting would have been the problem.
Exactly.
They'd have to have 100 Sun journalists standing there with their shoes off in order to arrive.
Tony Blair was so rattled by an article criticising him in The Sun, he wrote a personal reply to the paper. William Hague was allowed to respond to Mr. Blair's article next day, proving that the biggest pairs of tits are always in The Sun. The scores at the end of round one are everybody 4 points. We start round two with a letter seen in the Brighton Argus.
As a recent patient of the urology department, I would like to express my sincere thanks to the wonderful staff on Peel Stewart wards. The treatment I received was exemplary and no doubt contributed to my early discharge.
Thanks to Lynn Gillian for that. Andy, who paid the price for nursing the figures a little? Andy, who paid the price?
I'm thinking. It's to do with nurses. What's happened in the health service this week? It's a shambles.
Alan's got the answer.
People
well,
an ad
was taken out on behalf of the nurses. In an attempt to recruit nurses, and it said that nurses could get £20,000 a year. And all the nurses got extremely upset and the little watches quivered on their bosoms. Unsettles me even as I speak. Because they don't get anything like that. And the ad had to be pulled. It's the last time I mentioned pulled and nurses in the same... they complained to the ITC or something, and the ad was pulled.
Yes, the government's been told by the ITC to withdraw a TV ad aimed at recruiting nurses after it exaggerated how much they were paid. 2 points to Alan John, whose round-the-world holiday is all washed up.
Was this a giant P&O cruise liner, by
yes.
any chance? It was a German-built boat, so, of course, hyper-efficient, as you'd expect.
And travelled on the surface. It was very rare.
I was a bit disturbed, however, by the captain's reaction. What he actually said when he brought the ship back to Southampton is, at the end of the day, who knows when you're going to have a flat tyre?
He sounds like an inexperienced captain, doesn't he?
I quite like the fact that P&O's sister company is called Princess Cruising, which sounds like the Queen's sister out on the Razzle.
Luxury superliner Aurora had to turn back just 18 hours into its maiden voyage when a propeller shaft overheated. The ship has 3 swimming pools, a gym, a sauna, a cinema, 12 bars, 5 restaurants, but no toolkit. 2 points to John. Alan, why are the BBC replacing Roger Roger with On the Buses?
Yes, this is the great and good Greg Dyke, whom I admire this side idolatry. That, as we all do. I, in fact, walked here today from Cricklewood because I want to make a contribution to the BBC's finances. Greg has handed down an order saying that all BBC staff will now have to go by bus, whatever that is, said Greg, instead of taxis. And they will.
The thing I'm looking forward to, actually, sitting as I do opposite John Humphreys in the morning, is watching John Humphreys come puffing in because Sue McGregor has been late for her minibus. as they do a round robin round the outer edges of Surrey.
Is that the courtesy of the Variety Club of Great Britain? Is that a little sunshine bus that goes round?
I just can't imagine how the system's going to work well. I mean, what do you do if they don't get there in time to begin the Today programme?
I think whoever's there first gets to read the news. That's the answer. It's a chance for fame for a cleaner.
You'll find, John, there'll be no presenter for half an hour and then 12 will arrive at once.
BBC boss Greg Dyke has banned staff taxis between offices and introduced a bus service. The bus won't be driven by Vanessa Feltz, though the corporation is still desperately looking for a vehicle for her. A closed-circuit camera will be installed on the bus, not for security reasons, but so the journeys can be turned into a 13-part docu-soap series. John, to be or not to be bored senseless, for whom was that the million-dollar question?
Well, this is Carol Vorderman, isn't it? In Celebrity Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, when Carol Vorderman went head-to-head with Kirsty Young.
Oh, what a wonderful picture.
For...
Sorry.
A little drop of bromide for Alan, please.
Alan seems to be in heat this evening. Is this par for the course?
It's anyway, your first evening with me. It's the same every evening.
It is. Anyway, Carol Vorderman, that's the million-dollar question. I think it was actually £500,000. And she was asked which play, I think it was, Toby Belch was in. And very sophisticated woman. She said, that Shakespeare is a load of old rubbish, isn't it? And I don't know the answer to that. So she lost the money for her favourite charity, which... I was quite pleased to see her not answer that question because I've been in the receiving end of Carol Vorderman. I thought I'd give you another double entendre there.
Oh, I've only just got him settled. Do you mind? Have another blue tablet, Alan.
No, I know. whenever she's on Breakfast News, she quizzes me about arithmetic.
And she thinks Shakespeare's dull.
Quite hard to get too much excitement going with her. So, I really want to get this extra £125,000 for this charity. You think, well, just give it to them. You've got millions. Just give the money to them. That's one day of your adding up job, isn't it?
Kirsty Young described it as a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Yes, an ITV newsreader appearing on a show that people want to watch at a time they want to watch it. Linda, listen to this. reunited by Peaches and Herb. You were going to say that, weren't you?
I was back at the South Reach Youth Club there for a minute. I've had a top deck shandy and the world is full of romance. Never mind.
Linda, who gave a right royal refusal to never say never again?
Andy and the Ginger Sponger, isn't it? They're thinking about getting married again. And I think it's a lovely story because, well, just the thought of Prince Philip opening his newspaper and reading that, really. Choking on his bran flakes. It's a wonderful scene of domestic horror, isn't it? I like the idea of that. Yeah, apparently, apparently she's struggling as a single mother and moaning about the conditions, going, yeah, well, the civil list don't do nothing now, nothing, no repair. See ya, Eugenie, shut it. See ya, I've got no shoes for her. I'm having to send her to school in skis. Yeah, in reversal with royal tradition, they get on very well even though they're not married, whereas the tradition is you're married and you hate each other.
It was Prince Andrew who admitted in an interview with Tatler that he might wed Fergie again. At the service in June 1986, Fergie had two ladies-in-waiting in the Abbey while Andrew had half a dozen in his Aston Martin at the back. So the scores at the end of round three are Andy and John with 10, but Alan and Linda lead with 14 points. Andy, who's been accused of giving candy to our babies?
Is this about baby food?
Yes.
I couldn't quite see how this got in the newspapers, because it said that there's too much sugar in baby food, and anyone who's tasted baby food would know that it's only babies whose brains have not yet fully formed who would possibly tolerate it. Very sweet stuff. And the other surprise...
Why are you eating baby food?
No, I mean, this is in the past.
When you were a baby?
Times have improved.
What a memory.
I know. I can remember a lot. I remember a long tunnel coming out of the tunnel. Anyway. Anyway, the other shock revelation in this survey was that manufacturers are not always totally honest on the packet about what's in the food. I had to be brought round after that. I couldn't believe that. So I don't know what they're going to do. What are they going to do about it? Anything? No. See, I'm sounding like my dad again. You can't hear the words. Come on, Simon. It's all very well sitting there expecting me to make jokes about it, but what are they going to do about it? I'd be quite good. I think I'm after Paxman's job.
Yeah, who? You?
Yeah, that sort of aggressive style. I could be Paxman, the next Paxman. If he doesn't manage to catch that bus, I could be there.
One manufacturer was due to deny claims that excessive levels of sugar can lead to hyperactivity, but had to cancel the statement after a group of toddlers held a May Day riot and the company crashed. 2 points to Andy. John, why in future will parents who've told their children about the birds and the bees then have to warn them about the beetles?
We apologise for this breakdown in transmission. It will be resumed as soon as possible. I think Alan knows.
About the blister beetle.
It is
the most wonderful story of the week.
The blister beetle,
which is used when crushed in Spanish fly to get old men excited when they need it. Blister beetle has a wonderful trick on bees. Blister beetles are very, very small, and they gather together in groups of several hundred to make the shape of a female bee. A male bee seeking a female bee to have a bit of honey over, then lands on what it thinks is a female bee, whereupon all the blister beetles turn on their back and sink their tiny claws into the chest hair of the male bee. The male bee, clocking that he hasn't got anything to shag, then flies off back to the nest. Oh. Once he's in the nest, all the little blister beetles get off him and eat the honey that is stored there. And that is true.
2 points.
That is amazing, because that is evolution, isn't it? That is a few months ago, one blister beetle saying, yeah, I've got an idea.
Here's a plan.
Can we do the kind of shape of a bee? But also, if you're a tiny thing like a blister beetle and a bee is much bigger than you, how do you know what the shape of a bee is? I mean,
and it could sting you if it thought, hello, I've drawn a rough one here. She is actually composed of 14,000 beetles. Wow!
A bit of a letdown for the bee, really, isn't it, all round? Yeah. Probably has to go home and leaf through Reader's Hives.
Well, I'm amazed. I'm thrilled, actually. That's great. Great to find that out. I shall look at blister beetles in a totally different light. That's my intellectual superior.
Scientists from San Francisco State University say they first realised the blister beetle's amazing powers of mimicry after stumbling across old footage of one of them winning the 1974 Opportunity Knox final. Do you? The end result of the bees having sex with the beetle larvae could well see honey being marketed like peanut butter in both smooth and crunchy varieties. Linda, which stargazers are predicted to have problems with their conjunctions?
Oh.
No, we know this.
I didn't say I didn't know it, did I, Alan?
Well, it wasn't a very confident ooh.
I might have been behaving as a blister beetle and just fooling you with an impression. Actually, I haven't got a clue what this is. So, Alan, but I believe Alan does.
So you're the bee and we're the blister beetle.
Andy, it's your
Alan doesn't know either.
Andy, your turn to steal.
The answer to this question, Simon, is that according to astrologers, who, as we all know, are extremely conscientious scientists, all the planets have decided, it's like a sort of evening a line dancing. They've decided to get in one big line. And apparently this is incredibly portentous. And if you listen, as I sit here, you can hear the rumble of a tidal wave coming towards us. It's going to engulf us, probably before this show goes out.
And that's just the BBC shuttle bus arriving.
with Vanessa Feltz on board. That's the rumble. It's a very important astrology story. 2 points, please.
Absolutely. Astrologers have predicted that the alignment of the sun, the moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter and Saturn in one part of the sky, either side of this weekend, could spell disaster for us all. The alignment involves many bad portents. The moon in Mercury signifies turbulence, Jupiter in the 12th house of Saturn is a sign of ill omen, and Mars in Uranus suggests a resurgence of very old jokes. 2 points to Andy. Alan, who turned green at the prospect of being bangered up.
This is another very good story. It's a woman called Alison Mackenzie, who had a corozo, I believe. They're called green sausage. Or it wasn't supposed to be green. She went along to a supermarket and said, we've got one of these. And when she got it home, she found it was green. So she rang British Telecom. I don't know why. It's Sylvester Ransom thing. So we rang British Telecom. Anyway, she rang British Telecom, and British Telecom had this computer, which takes information in. And they took in the information about the green sausage, and some tit pressed a button, and and it was then circulated to every telephone in the world and every screen, and millions of people knew that this woman, Alison Mackenzie, had bought a green sausage. And they laughed at her, all except the people who had green sausages of their own who fell flat on the floor, thinking, my God, what's wrong with it? I thought they're supposed to be green. It was never fully explained, but that's British Telecom for you.
You say, the green sausage, I love you. Alison Mackenzie, whose complaint about a chorizo sausage she'd bought from a Peterhead supermarket, was mistakenly added to the voice bank of most of Britain's police forces. After realising that the message had been sent in error, police in Shropshire were forced to release without charge two Cumberland sausages, which they'd arrested and had been grilling for hours. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Right, well, this was sent in with the compliments of Owen Surridge, and it is from a magazine. I don't know which one. A man from Charlotte, North Carolina, having purchased a case of very expensive cigars, insured them against, among other things, fire. Within a month, having smoked his entire stockpile, the man filed a claim against the insurance company, stating that the cigars were lost in a series of small fires. The insurance company refused to pay, citing the obvious reason that the man had consumed the cigars in the normal fashion. The man sued and won. In delivering the ruling, the judge, agreeing that the claim was frivolous, stated nevertheless that the man held a policy from the company in which it had warranted that the cigars were insurable, and also guaranteed that it would insure against fire, without defining what it considered to be unacceptable fire, and was obliged to pay the claim. Rather than endure a lengthy and costly appeal process, the insurance company accepted the ruling and paid the man $15,000 for the rare cigars he lost in the fires. After he cashed the cheque, however, the company had him arrested on 24 counts of arson.
Linda.
Oh, thanks to Maurice Cantor of Edgware for sending this in. It's a programme of lunchtime talks at the Courtauld Art Gallery, and on the 6th of June, Catherine Putz will be discussing reclining nude Frank Dobson. That desperate, but it paid off.
Alan.
A quickie from the Los Angeles Times, Simon. It says, as part of the city's Summer Millennium Festival, Luciano Pavarotti will star in a Gaga performance of Falstaff.
Thank you all, and now let's look at the final scores. Andy and John have 14 points, but in spite of their late Steve Norris-style surge, Alan and Linda are this week's winners with 18 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from St Mary's Hadley newsletter sent in by K.R. of Ipswich.
On Monday the 10th of April, the children are presenting JC 2000, depicting the life of Christ through drama and mucus.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Curran, Andy Hamilton, Linda Smith and John Nicholson. The chairman was Simon Hoggett, and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.